podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to another of our special episodes for you, our generous Patreon subscribers. My name is Gary Naylor, and today I am joined by Rob Smythe. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Gary. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Rob. And joining us all the way from the 19th century in South Carolina, Mac Millings. Hello, Mac.
Hello, Gary. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Well, you will recall, because you are our most faithful listeners, that we are partway through our analysis of the World Cup goals as shown by the BBC at halftime in the World Cup final in 1986. And being halfway through 20, we've arrived at number 10, who is the celebrated footballer from South Korea, Soon Ho Choi. Now, Mac, you've been telling us that you've been a girly swot, as was referred to in the House of Commons a few months ago, and you've been reading up on this sort of stuff. So I'm going to come to you first to talk about Soon Ho Choi's goal for South Korea against Italy.
Okay. I mean, reading up on it, is really, that was the phrase I used to persuade you to let me on the podcast. But all right, quick rundown of the goal. Choi, he receives the ball. I'm going to watch it right now. Receives the ball on the corner of the 18-yard box, the left corner of the box. Takes a couple of touches. First major touch takes him inside the box. Second brings him back out. And they've shown him inside, but he hasn't really sorted it out properly yet. Wraps his foot around it and leathers it. I was going to say into the top left corner. It's an ish there. The goalie gets a hand to it. Giovanni Galli, who I had forgotten existed. I'm not even sure if I remembered, knew he existed to start with, but perhaps his goalkeeping here is the reason why we remember, you know, Zoff and then Zenga and Paliuka and so on afterwards, and I did not remember Galli.
Galli sounds like a kind of genre of Italian horror from the 70s, which I have to confess I have a certain partiality to. Yes, but he's in goal.
He wasn't that bad. He did win a couple of European Cups with Milan.
Well,
what's he ever done at the World Cup, though, eh?
Exactly. You know, I
think I could win a couple of European Cups for Milan behind that defence, Rob, any reflections of your own on this goal?
No, it's a really nice goal. I remember at the time really enjoying it because I knew precisely bugger all about Asian football, and it was quite exciting. Actually, South Korea went out with 1 point, but actually when he scores this goal, it puts the game and Italy's tournament place in the balance, because I think it made it 1-1 after about an hour.
Yes, that's
in a
right.
game that Italy had to draw. Had South Korea beaten Italy, it would basically have been North Korea in 66 all over again. Italy went on to win 3-2. They were 3-1 up, so it was fairly comfortable. But for 10 minutes or so after this goal, it was kind of in the balance. The other thing, according to Wikipedia, I know, but it's quite a nice story if true. I always thought it was Choi Soon Ho, but on this it's Soon Ho Choi on the BBC graphic. So he's 24 at this tournament. 5 years early, he played the World Youth Championship when South Korea spanked Italy 4-1. He scored two and made two. And again, according to Wikipedia, was on Juventus' radar after that.
Right.
He never actually played abroad, I don't think.
I don't think he did.
It's one of those nice moments, though, because I think a lot of people will know his name purely because of that one moment. And it's just, obviously, it's not Yoshimar levels of fame, but it's a reminder of how the World Cup can basically define a career in one moment, particularly era when there was the excitement of the unknown, which there obviously isn't now.
Absolutely, but he could definitely play. He was 6-1, so and he was quick too.
Yeah,
there's one moment in the game where an Italian defender sort of loses control of a Korean through ball a little bit, and he's got about 5 yards on Choi, who catches him in about a second and a half. and he had skill too in that same game. I mean, he won a lot of headers against, you know, an 80s Italian defense, including the second Korean goal, which came right after Italy's third. It was a really nice headed assist for that goal. But also, he was he had good footwork. He was the guy who had some nice footwork to set up Park's goal, the number 13 on this list that you talked about in the last episode.
Oh, was and that him as well?
That was him. Good, and then there was one moment right at the beginning of this game where there's actually a video on YouTube. It's pretty easy to find where you can it's French commentary, and it's just any bits that Choi was involved in the game. And there's one early bit where he gives Pietro Vjekovod the old twisted blood. He almost sits him down about three times in 2 seconds. And the commentator's like, Choi Su, qui joue avec Vjekovod. So, yeah, he could play. I mean, I don't know beyond the Wikipedia page if Juventus really were interested, but I wouldn't be surprised. He could play.
Given, yeah, and he won like 90 odd caps. I was going to say, given Vjekovod's attitude to physical contact, that's quite a brave thing to do, to humiliate him like that with so much of the game to go as well.
Yeah.
What I liked about the goal, and it does seem characteristic of World Cups, somehow you don't see as many in kind of league football or even Champions League football. And it kind of can't be true, at least I don't think it can be true, because the shot is struck from probably 20 yards or so, but it still appears to be on the way up when it goes into the net. And you're kind of thinking, how does the kind of physics work on this? Because, you know, the force was last applied when the ball left the foot. And yet you don't see so many goals in league football, but somehow every World Cup includes a goal that sort of takes off the stanchion as on the way up it sort of is intercepted by the net, the flailing goalkeeper having failed to get to it. And this is definitely one of them. As I said in a previous broadcast, I think sometimes altitude or the famous and mythical World Cup balls, which are always said to be moving in the air for goalkeepers, especially in the group stages, play a part. But it's definitely a goal that scored with the ball still apparently on the way up.
There were a lot of screamers in this tournament, actually. I have no idea what that's to do with the thin air or anything else, but there are a hell of a lot. I mean, we've spoken before about how this is probably the best portfolio of goals from any World Cup, so maybe it's just an extension of that, but there are plenty. There's another one coming up.
And there were plenty that didn't get on the list too, but I'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we got some goodness, but I want to put a question to you, and Rob, this is probably sort of from your days of poring over world soccer. African players were beginning to come into European leagues in the probably more the early 90s than the late 80s. But Asian players, I don't think there were any Asian players in elite leagues. There were certainly none I can recall in England.
Were there some in Germany?
The trailblazers?
Let me just look. Did Chabum Kun play? Millings is going to know. Millings is going to have a list of about 25. Chabum Kun played for Eintracht Frankfurt from 79 to 83 and Leverkusen from 83 to 89 and did pretty well, scored goal every 2.5-3 games, and he was a South Korean legend. I mean, this was his last tournament, 86, but beyond that I'm trying to think in England who would be the first significant one.
Well, it was Park Ji-sung, wasn't there, at Manchester United, and
there must have been someone before that, surely.
Who was the guy who I think also came to Manchester United, the Japanese playmaker who never really made it?
Oh, Kagawa. I thought he'd be a brilliant signing. He came from Dortmund. I thought it'd be a great... I think part of the problem for him was that they signed him before they knew for certain they were going to get Van Persie. And then when Van Persie became available, he was a must sign. And it just kind of muddied everything, because then Rooney's... I think he originally envisaged Kagawa behind Rooney, and it ended up being Rooney and Van Persie and so on and so on. But anyway, that's way off-piste.
Yeah. But I mean, I may be guessing with this, when World Cup rolls around again, as is likely but still not certain in 2022, I suspect that the teams of whom we'll know least are likely to come from Asia. It's it's strange that, that Asian football, because it's obviously it's huge over there, despite the fact that there are competing team sports, obviously in Japan, there's things like baseball and in Korea as well. But they haven't quite made the same impression as the Africans and obviously the long-standing South Americans coming to the UK, and indeed these days the North Americans.
No, I would agree. Certainly in the UK, I think they have it obviously in other countries, particularly Germany and maybe I'm trying to think of all the other big leagues. Maybe it is just the smaller leagues like Belgium, place like that. I'm not sure, but certainly Germany, obviously Kagura as well, and there are a few others. And their scouting is so good, isn't it, in Germany generally?
Yeah, well, they'll get the metrics right. So we'll move on to a player far more familiar to any of us, and a spectacular goal. So I'm going to start with you on this one, Rob, if I may.
Yeah, so this is Michael Laudrup for Denmark in their 6-1 spanking of Uruguay. It's just a really lovely, smooth solo goal. He beats two or three players. I mean, it's interesting, when we did the book Danish Dynamite, which is about this team, we spoke to him and he said, I had a quick look to remind myself, and he said the goal was really easy and I don't think it was anything special. And his point was that he essentially runs in a straight line. He only changes direction once. I mean, it's still a fantastic goal. And I don't think it was false modesty. I remember thinking this at the time. I think it is just that genius sees things through different eyes. You know, I think the thing that stimulated him the most were things like those no-look scoop passes over the top. But the thing is, if you actually pick the ball up, if you look at the goal, when he picks the ball up, he's like 30 yards, maybe 25 yards. And there are five Uruguayan players about to close in on him. And they've already had one player sent off for brutality. And this is a tournament when they were described as the scum of world football by the SF Scottish FA chief executive. So even just the act of dribbling against them took a certain bit of courage. Yeah, it's just a lovely goal. It's so smooth, even down to the way he walks around the keeper. This was probably it was the most famous game played by that team. And Uruguay were one of the tournament favourites, and Denmark absolutely annihilated them. I always feel a bit sorry for Preben Elkjær because he scored three and made two in this game. And most people just remember the other, the sixth goal, which he had bugger all to do with Michael Laudrup's.
Yeah, I particularly like the fact that he sells the referee a dummy on the way through. It's a Maradona-esque in some ways, and that he picks the ball up. He's got the whole of the defence in front of him, and sort of 2 seconds, well, maybe not 2 seconds, 5 seconds later, he's got nobody in front of him, and he's slotting it into an empty net. And you rewind it a couple of times to find out how he's done it. It's not the kind of blazing acceleration of a Maradona, but it's just a lovely
class.
Balance.
It's just class, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a balance. It's a body swerve. It's the fact that he rejects options that he could take a couple of times en route, and defenders are slightly spooked by that, and then that lovely sort of low heart rate finish.
One small bit of housekeeping. Sort of, there's a nice symmetry in. Part of the reason he's able to go straight around him is that Søren Lerby makes a brilliant off-the-ball run. And that was a big part of this team. And the breakthrough point for this team, and apologies for going on about them, I know Mike and I are obsessed with them, but it was probably an even better solo goal by Jesper Olsen against England, the last-minute equaliser in a European Championship qualifier in 82. And that also essentially was made by Lerby on the off-the-ball run. So it's quite nice that the two most famous solo goals of that era, of that team, both involved that, particularly because it's not just a coincidence, it was a really big part of their game.
Yeah, well, he was a smart footballer, wasn't he, Lerby? Was he at Ajax and then went on to win?
Yeah, he was basically a serial winner, Ajax, Bayern, everywhere. He won sort of like 8 league titles, something grotesque. Yeah. Anyway, Mac.
And Mac. in the build-up to this goal, it's Lerby that the ball sort of half-cleared by Uruguay, and he just does this nonchalant, very high, like moon ball lob out to the right, you know, socks around his ankles and all of that, which is, I don't know, has a sort of a hoddle arrogance to it. But I'm actually going to, if, as you said, Rob, genius sees things through different eyes, then I must be a genius.
Oh,
because I'm sort of with Laudrup. I'm going to be the Mike Gibbons of the Birdcat goal here. I mean... He you're right to say that he doesn't really have to have like world-class acceleration here. He sort of walks around the defense. You've got the Uruguayan defender, can't remember who it is. Oh, Victor Diogo. And his little legs are pumping, trying to keep up as Laudrup just sort of strolls through. The goalie throws himself to the ground. Laudrup doesn't really seem to do very much to sit him down. And then the finish is so gentle, as if to say, you guys are so slow and bad, there's nothing you can do to stop the ball going in the net. And sure enough, the one backtracking defender, you know, meets the ball on the goal line and just whacks it into the back of the net himself. It's a good goal. But my favorite part is the Lerbu lob to the side and his run off the ball, and also the first touch Laudrup takes, where he does that little thing where you like where you flick it up to yourself. It just does a little one of those, sucks the defender in, and then he goes. That's what makes the goal. And after that, I don't know about the defending.
I think I do know what you mean, and I think part of the reason the goal is so charming is because of who scored it and when he scored it. I mean, he'd been emerging as the best young player in Europe, almost went to Liverpool, did go to Juventus. He would be, what, 21, I think, at this tournament? 22 at most. So it did all kind of fit in with his ascent. And sometimes, you know, if a different player scores that goal, then it probably isn't celebrated quite as much. But, yeah, I know what you mean about the Lerby bit, by the way. I absolutely love that. And he just... The whole goal, really, every aspect of it shows just how relaxed they were and how much fun they seemed to have until they... Well, they were certainly in the first group when they beat a decent Scotland side, a theoretically very decent Uruguay side, and a West Germany team who would get to the final. And they were just so relaxed. And that was the charm of that team, really, until they were too relaxed against Spain and spanked 5-1.
Is there a parallel here? Between it's often said, and again you actually see it, and you tend to see it more when you're at the ground, because of course at the ground you can choose where to look. I've written a bit, I need to explore this further actually. I've written a bit about the parallels of, believe it or not, watching cricket and watching opera, because you have to choose where to look when you watch opera, and you have to choose where to look when you watch cricket, and to some extent football as well. And looking at this, is there a parallel between what's often said that he found space by not moving, in that you see some of the greatest centre forwards, some of the greatest goal scorers, and sometimes like Lineker, it's about running across the first man, but sometimes, and I think Ian Rush was always very, very good at this, they'd somehow stand still and the ball would come to them in 5 yards of space. And while this kind of whirling dervishes, like that cartoon with the Tasmanian devil, were all sort of spinning around all over the place, these guys would stand still and find that space that proves so elusive at that sort of level below the elite. And the parallel I'm drawing here is that Laudrup picks the ball up 30 yards away from goal. And as you say, he just takes an almost direct route. He doesn't sort of stop and try and beat a man or look left or right and lay off a pass. He just trusts his fellow players to make enough distraction while he gets on with the shortest route from A to B, which is running in a straight line, going past the goalkeeper who's expecting him to chip the ball, and he doesn't chip the ball. He simply takes another straight line and then passes it into the back of the net. Or am I overly simplifying and drawing a parallel that isn't there?
I do know what you mean, and I think there is something in it, but I suppose the difference with this is that Laudrup has to be prepared to react at any stage. You know, if someone flies, it's not like that's going to happen. Whatever happens, he's going to run in a straight line. This is what fascinates me about these players, particularly the solo goals, is that their brain is working so fast. So, for example, if the keeper follows the path he should, or if he goes where Laudrup's going and dives at his feet, Laudrup has to react to that. It's not like you could say, right, this... Whereas standing still is slightly different. It's more passive, I suppose. But I do know what you mean, though, that... that ultimately, because of the way they defended, he didn't have that much. I'm just looking at it now, though. He actually,
It's a slight drag to the right.
The keeper which is nice, but the keeper commits himself really early. Does Laudrup know that? Does he look at him? Because if he does, then his awareness is even better than you would think. See, I don't think when Laudrup goes past Big Victor on the edge of the area, he's necessarily at that stage planning to run straight past the keeper. I think somehow, and I don't know because I don't think he looks at him, but maybe it's peripheral vision, maybe it's sixth sense, God knows. But I think he's still reacting to different events at each different point. And I think that, as much as anything, is what makes it really great, because I agree the individual components aren't that good or aren't that spectacular or skillful. When you put them all together, I think it's still a great goal.
It's a great goal.
Mac, these days, you'd expect... Yep. A player, or you certainly see far more of it, especially perhaps in the last 5 years, that once the goalkeeper goes to ground, or even once he's moving to go to ground, we get the dink out, don't we? It's the dink that you get. I'm still not sure that the drag past, the going past the keeper and then sliding it in from an admittedly acute angle isn't always a better bet, because the dink you have to get right in a couple of ways. First of all, a goalkeeper can put a hand up. Sometimes they save it with a kind of hand. Sometimes the defender can get back, because obviously as you're lifting the ball, then you're giving a little bit more time, and sometimes it only needs a stride for the defender to get back. And of course, then you also have the tremendous comedy of the dink that goes wrong and goes over the bar, which always gives an enormous joy to everyone who is disinterested in the results. Where do you stand on the dink versus round the keeper argument?
Well, I always used to go round the keeper. Personally, that's where I stand. I did. I never once went round the keeper. I think it is a lost art, perhaps to a degree. Yeah. I do often find myself yelling at the screen, "Why didn't you go round the keeper?"
Yeah, I do as well.
I remember Barry Davis bemoaning this as long ago as 1999. It was a dying art. It was when De Canio scored. He went around Roman van der Hau and scored. And Barry Davis basically said, "That's wonderful to see, blah, blah, blah. We don't see it much anymore." So it's clearly has been. It's a good point, but the kind of recent examples I think of people going around the keeper, they're always buggering it up from a tight angle. Is it that the game's too fast and therefore they can't soften the touch? I don't know. That's probably not is it?
I think sometimes the goals which used to go round the keeper are now in that, dare we say, grey area of inviting contact, where rather than taking it right round the keeper.
But that's another advantage going round, isn't it?
Well, I think it is.
Puts hands on you then.
But yeah, but you're almost not playing for the goal, you're playing for the content. So instead of seeing what Laudrup does here, which is take it wide and pass it into the goal, that you get far fewer of those, because more often than not, you're taking contact from the keeper and
you're sticking your leg out.
Sometimes it's a full sort of dragging leg Perez style, and sometimes the keeper has just got too much momentum and cleans you out and so on. But given the number of ways you can score a one-on-one, there must be some stats somewhere. There's a sort of an Opta robot counting them. How many times?
You know, Rob's listening to you right now. you shouldn't call him names.
But there must be someone sort of looking at, sort of shooting through the legs, going round the keeper, getting the penalty, the dink, all these different options. And somewhere there must be some metric that says, your chance of a goal, albeit, via a penalty and VAR or whatever, is enhanced when you invite contact as opposed to dinking or going round the keeper. Who knows? But it's a fine example of as you say, something of a dying art. Shall we move on to goal 8, which is a fine example of something that definitely isn't a dying art? Mac.
Yes. Belanov.
Belanov!
Yeah, he did not have to go around the keeper.
the shot would have gone through the keeper.
Yeah. Rob, I think you said there were a lot of, or Gary, one of you, there were a lot of long range screamers in this tournament and on this list. And I think are there three Soviet goals on the, this list, I think, and all three. Alenikov was was number 20. I mean, they all, and I think you talked about this on the last episode also, I think they all have that just straight arrow trajectory. No bend, no curve. They just, I mean, so sweetly struck. But also, to greater or lesser extent, they involve some good build-up play. I mean, the...
Yeah, they do, actually. That's a good point.
Yeah, even before you... On this video, if you actually you look back a few seconds more, Pfaff clears the ball, and then one of the Soviets, well, one of the Ukrainians, because they were all Ukrainian, just brings it down out of the air nicely, and then they just play it around at the back a bit, and then suddenly they're off. Zavarov lays it off to Belanov, whose first touch takes it away from the defender. His touch is a lot better than Choi's back at two goals ago, but sorts his feet out and just Belanov's it from right to left. Bangs the post and in, textbook. It's a beautiful, beautiful goal. It's definitely one of my favourites on the list.
It's a sweet strike, as they say, and I love the two reactions that we get after the goal, because the goalkeeper and defender are standing there, not really looking at each other, but both have got the double teapot on, saying, "Oh, as the ball has crashed past either the goalkeeper, literally didn't move." So they're giving it both the double teapot. Oh, yeah, what are we supposed to do with that? Well, Belanov's running off, giving it the full Marco Tardelli, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got the two arms pumping there, looking for a camera. And it's the kind of joy and despair of football. And, you know, they were a very expressive and flair organised side, the Ukrainians, who are always called Russians, who are playing for the Soviet Union in that World Cup. And, you know, it's a really outstanding goal. He must have kicked the exact center of mass or center of whatever it is that's in a sphere there, because it looked very much like the ball had no rotation on it. It just went arrow straight into the absolute top corner, and it would still be traveling towards Guadalajara now had the goal not got in the way. Rob, any reflections on Belanov's blaster?
No, just the point Mac made about the build-up to all of them was really good, actually. And I was thinking how that whole team, the way they move the ball, they remind me of a sensible soccer team. Even just the way Belanov just scurries away from his man at speed and then belabours it off the bar. Yeah, I mean, he's another one a kind of closer to Yosima in terms of his impact at a World Cup. He hadn't scored a goal for USSR going into the tournament. I think they only played four games. Scored against Hungary in that 6-0 win, and then scores this hat-trick. Even though they lost 4-3 after extra time in a crazy game that they probably should have won. And then on the back of that and Kiev winning the Cup Winners' Cup, he won the Ballon d'Or, which is quite interesting. I'm trying to think of contenders. Obviously, in those days,
It was Lineker came second, and Butragueno was third, I think.
There was Platini in, must have been high up somewhere. But anyway, yeah, Maradona obviously wasn't eligible, or he'd have won it with approximately 100% of the vote. But even so, to win it's pretty impressive. It's just a shame that USSR team bugged it up, essentially. They led twice, were pegged back with these sort of iffy goals that looked half offside, but I think essentially they were just done by straight balls. It was really annoying because they were such an impressive team. I'd love to have seen them theoretically get to the semis and take on Maradona. That would have been really interesting. But they didn't.
One of the things I like about the build-up for that goal, and I know I've bored on about this either at Ness and Dorma or in conversations offline, that I really believe in the change of pace as being a weapon in football. And you can get that change of pace either from the killer pass or from a dribble or from player taking responsibility, and his whole goal is a kind of build up, an acceleration of change of pace. If I'm not getting into too many derivatives there, because first of all, they're in their own half and they're just knocking it about until there's a forward pass. Good control, carries the ball, goes to Belanov. Belanov goes wide, and then smash, the ball goes into the net. And it's that change of pace, I think, which is so critical in football, which is why sometimes you can have particularly number 10s who don't have to be that fast. If they're quick in the thinking and then can inject that change of pace sometimes on the half turn, sometimes with a killer pass, you can have a footballer every bit as effective and every bit as a change of pace as kind of Gareth Bale running from inside his own half into the opposition penalty area in 3.2 seconds. So I very much enjoyed that aspect of the goal.
Yep, agreed.
Shall we move it on to... our next goal, and I think this one is for you, Mac, and it's...
I have a feeling it's for Rob, but I'll take it.
Yeah, it might be for Rob. So it's a Moroccan player. I'm not quite sure if even
I think it's,
they
it's,
knew how to pronounce him.
Abderrazak Kairi, maybe? I don't know. But
Kairi. I think he got two pronunciations even in the one short videotape, but Kairi, yeah.
So there's... So Morocco had drawn the first two games 0-0 with Poland and England. England had 10 men for the second half because Ray Wilkins was sent off. They'd probably been the better team in both games, but were pretty defensive. They were technically very good. They had some beautiful players. Aziz Boulibaly in particular was a class act. Yeah. All three goals in this game. They beat Portugal 3-1 to not only qualify, but to top the group. And all three goals are absolutely lovely, but this is the best one. Kairi or Kairi, I think it's Kairi, but anyway. He's already scored one really good goal, kind of rifled it into the bottom corner from 25 yards. That was with his right foot. And then this one is just a nice build-up, big, high, booming cross from the right, drops beyond the far post, and he meets it perfectly just above the ground and kind of lasers this volley back into the far corner. It's just a very good goal. And they were they the first African team to reach second round? I think they were.
Would be in 82, did Cameroon?
No, Cameroon didn't. Cameroon did really well, but they went out without losing. Yeah. But anyway, either way, Morocco, this was a seriously good side. They played West Germany, who got to the final in the second round, were the better team, but were a bit too cautious and got stung by a last-minute free kick from Mateus. Yeah, it was just a really classy team. I've never seen... their games in full, at least not since 86. And I quite like to watch this one back, actually, because in many ways I prefer the third goal. The build-up is so nice. And then the guy whose name I've completely forgotten, which completely undermines my argument about how memorable we were, knocks it past the keeper on the run.
No,
it was Mary Cremau. It's Mary Cremau.
Yeah, it was Mary Cremau.
Yeah.
Which is my favourite footballing name.
But they're a team I'd like to know more about, because... they won a pretty tough group. I mean, it doesn't look that amazing, Portugal, Poland, England, but they were all decent sides. And then they went on to outplay West Germany as well. This was a huge surprise, because I remember even Martin O'Neill saying, well, if England can't beat Morocco, they don't deserve to be in the tournament. So those kind of, and Martin O'Neill's an intelligent man, certainly by the standards of many in football. That kind of attitude was prevalent. And I remember it was a huge shock that they'd beaten Portugal. Whether it should have been, probably not actually in hindsight.
It was definitely the age of unapologetic references to minnows, where if you explored it even to the extent of saying, can you name perhaps two of the better players who might not be considered minnows, you'd be instantly met with, they're all minnows, aren't they, these players that whose names we can't pronounce. So it was very much... very much, to some extent, forgivable, because it wasn't that easy to find out information.
No, that's true.
But not much else.
The only thing I would say against, I agree with you, the only thing I would say against that is that there had been enough signs that African football, Tunisia won against Mexico in 78 and almost put West Germany out. 82 was the big one, because not only did Cameroon do really well, we had Algeria, who were absolutely charming, beat West Germany, might have gone through, but for that iffy game. In between West Germany and Austria, so there were enough signs that things were changing.
Yeah, it's a best mitigation rather than explanation for ignorance.
Oh, one other thing on Kyrie, just quickly. He, in the first game, thanks to Chris Freddie's World Cup book for this, he came on a sub for 27 seconds, which at the time was an unwanted World Cup record.
The goal reminds me a little bit of one scored by Darnell Fairlie.
Yes, that's what I was thinking the other week for West Brom at Newcastle. Exactly the same. Meets it just above ground and absolutely lasers it into the bottom, far back whence it came.
They didn't make much of that goal.
I thought it was a brilliant goal. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
The low volley is a little bit like the drag past the keeper and slide the ball home. You don't see it very often.
It's harder than a half volley, isn't it?
I think it is. Mac, what's your appreciation of this one?
I love this goal. For all the reasons that Rob said. And on that volley, he sort of weird. He slides in.
Yeah.
I wasn't even sure. I couldn't tell on the grainy footage. I had to watch it several times to be sure that he took it with his left. And as you say, he'd scored the first with his right. But it is just beautiful technique, and as you said, all three goals, none of them would have disgraced the top 20, on this list. They were all really, really lovely goals, and they didn't just beat Portugal. I mean, they just cantered past them. This goal put them two up after 26 minutes, and Portugal had a few chances, but Morocco were a seriously good side.
Really good technically, weren't they?
And Bouda Bala, you mentioned. Oh.
Yeah, he's a lovely player.
Yeah, really good.
He played, I think he ended up at Lyon, not around, I think it was a fair while after this. But,
yes.
But yeah, he played in France and possibly in Switzerland as well.
There's one other element of this goal that I really like. And again, it's not something necessarily you can plan for. But when you see it, it just gives you that kind of, well, it does me anyway, give me that kind of slightly warm feeling. Oh, that's good. That's the way the world should be. Because there's no break in stride, is there? Mm. He runs onto the ball and hits it all in the same stride. And, the kind of classic through ball as a player is running onto it, where they don't break stride and, you know, one touch, one goal. It's always absolute delight. And you sometimes think, well, you know, where does the credit lie for the unbroken stride? Is it in the pass? Is it in the player who's running on? Or is it just in that serendipity that the stars align for you and the ball goes in the back of the net? Am I overplaying the hand there of the unbroken stride goal?
No, I know exactly what you mean. I think it looks absolutely beautiful.
Also, Gary, for you, because I know you like this, there's a John 3:16 in the crowd.
Oh, excellent.
and also, the camera
work.
That's
our South Carolina correspondent noticing.
they're everywhere. But Confederate flags and guns. Yeah. So, there's that. And also, after both of Kyrie's goals, the camera cuts to very disappointed-looking Portuguese women in the crowd, which seems odd. They don't look at like celebrating Moroccans. They have just close-ups of sad ladies.
That was the norm back then. Do you remember particularly when Brazil went out of the World Cup? It was just an excuse for a lonely cameraman to lose himself for 20 minutes.
the 1982 official FIFA World Cup film called Golé, which is every bit as bad as a film that someone has titled Golé, you would expect. Reviewed at my website, sportsfilmsreview.wordpress.com. Sean Connery, and if you think we're mangling the names, just have a listen to Sir Sean trying to wrestle with some of the more exotic names at the 1982 World Cup. But there's a Brazil match where you definitely see more of a couple of female Brazil fans in the crowd than you do of the players. Whether the director was pushing them for a spot on an Italian game show or something, I don't know.
Do you remember there was a
just
test,
extraordinary?
There was a test match a few years ago. It was South Africa Australia in 2014. It was when Mitchell Johnson ran riot. And there was a cameraman who just, like, it became so embarrassing. Every single, between deliveries, he was just finding beautiful women to home in on.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, I think It's the honey shot, they call it. But I think they've cut it out now, I think, in South African cricket.
I'm sure they have. That was so pronounced.
Just too much.
I vividly remember that day, just like laughing at how absurd it was and how brazen it was. But anyway.
Well, let's have a look at a terrible beauty, which is the most used for the great man, Mac, our final goal today.
Well, I mean, putting this goal at number six.
Yes, exactly.
The decision making that went into that, it is the Graham Poll showing Joe Simonich three yellow cards of World Cup top 20 goal list decision making. It's Zinedine Zidane deciding it would be a good idea to introduce Marco Materazzi to the top of his head.
If we're getting into a Cole Porter song here, it's like you're the tops. I think we'll throw in your Brexit, you're the tops.
I mean, honestly, when I saw this, that this was number six, I knew how Patrick Battison felt when Tony Schumacher cleaned him out. That's how bad it is to have this at number six. Now, I know, Gary, you think it's better than another Maradona goal, I tend to disagree, but
it's one and two, isn't it? It should be one, whichever way you order them. The two Maradona. All I would say is the top five are all in their own way absolutely brilliant. But
yeah,
I mean,
I've
come to the conclusion. Just quick, this is my favourite Maradona goal of this World Cup, but I actually still think the England one is better, just because the wider context and everything else. But anyway,
yeah, I'll just throw in that. I think
it's Diego Maradona Belgium.
Maradona against Belgium, yeah.
When we had a little bit of an email exchange on the way to this, and you know, you were expressing your astonishment, Mac. I think I said that not only is it too low in number six goals at World Cup Mexico 86, it would be too low at number six World Cup goals.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Matt, can you describe the terrible beauty?
Well,
just watch.
You talked about this a lot in detail, because I remembered you doing it. It was a podcast you did on this entire World Cup, which you released on my birthday, for which I remain grateful. But I'll let you guys talk about the actual goal again if you want. But I want to mention the Jose Luis Cachufo, who is the gentleman that passes the ball to El Diego. No, seriously, though, if you
I know, I'm just watching it now, I don't know what you're going to say.
Yeah. He gets the assist.
He gets this clearance, he controls it, he's sort of up on his chest, he dribbles forward, he's wearing number nine, but he's a defender. This, by the way, World Cup semi-final, is his sixth cap. He won his second cap, was the second game of the tournament, and then he was in the side after that full time in a back four, all over a back four to start with, and then in a back three from the England game onwards. And I mean, the way he brings the ball out, and then he keeps running forward.
That's the best bit. He's really optimistic, isn't he, about the return ball? It's not happening, mate. He's there on the edge
no,
of the box.
It's not.
He's almost running on the spot with excitement. Like, give it me back, Diego.
Yeah. When it's great. I mean, I would love to say it was a bit like the Lerby run of distraction. A little bit. But Maradona did say something like that in his book about this World Cup. He said he actually loved Cachufo and talked about how great he was in this World Cup. He was just brought into the side. And he also laid on a goal against Bulgaria for Valdano. Where he robs he's way up the pitch, robs the left back, and a delicious cross to the back post, and Valdano nods in.
Is that the one, just quickly, you know, Gary was talking about shots rising? Is that one where Valdano almost, it's a weird header, it's almost like the header's still rising, even though I don't understand the physics of that, but anyway.
Yeah, a little bit like that Hullet header. Was it the other goal?
In the European final. Yeah, that's terrifying. I'm surprised he didn't give himself concussion after that. That's one of the most forceful headers I think I've ever seen. Maybe it's just because of the dreadlocks kind of made it even more so.
Yes. But Cachufo, very interesting. And I hate to get morbid, but he died in rather tragic circumstances a number of years ago in a hunting accident where he was driving.
Jesus.
Yeah, he was driving with his rifle between his legs, went over a bump, and...
Are you serious?
And shot himself, yeah.
I didn't know that at all.
Dreadful. Yeah, so...
That's crazy. Sort of
it's very yeah. crazy. It's sort of a South Carolina way to go, actually. But
yeah.
Oh, God. 2004, but no, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Surprise
Sorry.
Me, I don't remember... No, no, it's... I don't remember anything being made of that at the time.
No.
Crikey.
So, I want to... sort of say one of the things that I like most about the goal and then put a slight spanner in the love in. So one of my favorite things about this goal, and I've talked about it a lot over the years, is that one of the reasons why Maradona has the greatest balance of any player that I've ever seen is that when he scores the goal, he's slightly falling over the whole time because he's spun away to his left and he's hit it across the right hand side, and he looks like he's about to fall over. He also looks a little bit like a kind of long on in cricket who's about to step over the boundary line because he's right on the edge of the pitch, but he both fails to fall over and continues vertical and fails to go over the line to go over the goal line. And I think it's just because he can. I just think he's thinking, oh, I could fall over now, but I'm not going to. And I could step over the line here, but I'm not going to because I can do these things that other human beings can't.
Gary, I almost fall over playing football all the time. And no one calls me the best player in the world. So
I think he knew intuitively on some level that by not falling over and by staying inside the line, he would make the goal even greater.
Yeah,
but I really think it's one of the rare examples of the goal like exists after it's scored. I just think that it's such a glorious image of him staggering to stand his feet because the whole goal is about balance and it just really rammed it into your head that you've just seen. I mean, there are three goals I always remember I absolutely love because of the balance of the footballers. The other two is John Barnes against QPR when he twists in midair. I have no idea how he does it. And there's a third one when George Best is run over by Chopper Harris going about 90 miles an hour and he still stays on his feet. And what I love about everything is quantifiable these days, isn't it? There are optostats for everything, but there's something so magical about seeing great balance and you cannot put an optostat on it at all and you'll never be able to. I think that's what elevates this goal. But just one other thing I love about it, apart from if you look at the Belgian defenders individually, like they haven't got a clue. One of them ends up being twisted around facing the wrong way. The other thing I love is the first touch to go past the defender. He does this to Terry Fenwick as well in the England goal. He takes him out of the game before he even knows he's in it. The defender's preparing for a two-touch move. And before he knows it, Maradona's not only gone past him one touch, but the weight is perfect of the touch so that it doesn't bring anyone else into the game. Then you get the sudden swerve, veer away. Oh, it's just astounding goal. It's just beautiful. Well,
You've almost answered the question that I was going to put, but I'll just throw into those balanced goals Ryan Giggs against Arsenal in that.
That was a great goal, but I don't think it was as poetic as those three.
No, it wasn't. But his balance to be running that fast, falling over was
that's
amazing.
True. But I just think with these three, there's a challenge because Maradona has changed direction so he's off balance massively.
Yeah.
Best is hit by, and he's hit brutally by Chopper Harris. If you pause it, his body's at right angle. It's extraordinary. And Barnes actually does it in midair. He twists in midair. So I still, far be it for me to downplay a Man United goal, especially that one. But I don't know. I don't think it's quite at that level personally.
No, I think that's fair. So my gloss on this goal is that everyone knows Maradona. I mean, I at 23, watching this, who hadn't seen much of him beforehand, knew this. Why are they showing him the left side? Why are they giving him his left foot to play with?
I don't think they think they are. I think that they think, if you watch when he goes past the guy, you look at the angle he's running now, when he goes past the first wave, the last defender comes across and he thinks he's got it covered, but it's such a sharp swerve, it's a sharp change of direction, which again is where the balance comes in. Like he suddenly really quickly veers. I don't think they're deliberately, but I'm certain they're not. Nobody's that stupid, apart from maybe Mikhail Sylvester when he did it to Raul. But I don't. I just think it's such a brilliant. I mean, I suppose I know what you mean. They could, if they had the time, you could freeze it. You could do the Monday Night Football. You would say, get two people over to the other side and just let him go anywhere on his right foot. But I just think it's such a. I think the last defender, I don't know who it is, but I think he thinks he's got it covered. And before he knows it, he's. Because if you look when Maradona veers away from him, he ends up not going with Maradona, but he ends up doing a 270 degree turn before he ends up. That's how screwed he is, basically.
And if it was that easy.
Beautiful. It's just beautiful.
I mean, if it was that easy to just, you know, show him onto his right foot, then, you know, you wouldn't be getting goals or at least moves like this sort of, you know, once a fortnight or sometimes two or three times in a match. They don't always get remembered. They don't always get onto the highlights clips. But this was what this unique player could do is simply pick the ball up, and there was no way to defend. Sometimes there was no way even to kick him because you just couldn't get close enough. You couldn't predict. You couldn't push him one way, couldn't push him the other, couldn't foul him, couldn't even stop him punching the ball in the net. Boom, boom. But he solved all of those problems instinctively and at a speed which was beyond the thinking and the physical capacities of anyone else.
One thing that often isn't commented on in solo goals, I think is really important here, is the weight of each touch. There are two in particular, one past the first defender and then the last touch before he shoots. The weight is absolutely perfect. If it's any less than that, then basically your man does his 270 and comes across and gets a tackle in. Any more than that and he risks bringing Faf into the game. It's just, it's mind-boggling that they could calculate everything and also be as precise as that. I could watch that for. I just love this goal so much.
Yeah, I agree. Mac, are you going to join in with a little postscript to the loving?
It's all right.
But better than Laudrup's or equally,
you know what?
Shit.
I do. I mean it. No, I mean it. I do think it has a lot of similarity. It's Laudrup's on fast forward. It's a wonderful goal. And you're right. It's about balance. I like the after celebration too. Although, for me, that's just afters. That's beautiful balance. I think really the defense was worried about my boy Jose Luis, and that was really, you know, let Maradona in. I mean, obviously.
The sheer enthusiasm of Cachufo for the return ball tickles me every time. It's fantastic. He's just properly waiting around.
Yeah,
he just wanted a better view, I think, of the genius at work.
Yes, as you said, he's sort of running up and down on the spot. He follows the ball in. He doesn't, as Maradona peels off to the left and does his balancing act along the line. He follows it in as if he just wants to watch the ball go into the net and you know, because he was really a part of this thing. And I don't know, it's a joyous goal. It is, it's like you said, Rob, it's one and two with the other goal, you know, it should be on this list. But the fact that it's this far down means that I got to talk about it with you.
Yes.
A question. Often, especially when you watch these kind of official films and so on, you see goals from non-standard, or rather the angles that we're not familiar with. I don't recall seeing this goal from any other angle than the one that is the high camera, sort of from the halfway line. I don't recall seeing this from behind the goal or from the other side or anything like
Gary,
that.
Well, Gary, you need to watch Hero, the official FIFA video of the 1986 World Cup.
I think I might need to watch Hero, the official.
I'm assuming it's got other angles anyway, given that most things are. But it's a good point. I haven't seen it from too many. Having said that, it's such a perfect angle.
Yeah,
I could happily just watch that again and again. But actually, I might check Hero out now and see if it does show. I'm sure it does. That's the Michael Caine one, isn't it? With the really dramatic sort of post Scarface music.
They find so many ways to screw up these movies. It's just whichever way they found to take a football match and turn it into a kind of art house nightmare. They'll have found it. But maybe we'll come back to that when we do our final batch of five goals, which will be available to Patreon subscribers probably about 3 or 4 weeks after you're hearing this in 2021. Mac, do you want to say any final words before you bid us farewell and go off and harvest some cotton or whatever it is you do in South Carolina?
I will thank you, sir, that I am a high quality teacher around these parts, and I shall. But no, final words. Well, honour and a pleasure to do this with you. Apart from Laudrup's five great goals, actually, I was showing them to my son, who is 15, almost 16.
Oh, and really? Oh,
watches an enormous amount of football. Modern football, a lot of the Championship, because he's a Watford fan,
yes.
You know, because he loves and respects his father, and so I said, "Do you want to see these goals?" He's like, "Sure," and he watches them, and he starts saying, "Well, that's no good. Look at that defending.
Yeah.
That's Championship defending, Dad. What are you talking about? The only ones he liked were the Maradona and the Belanov."
Yes.
The rest he had no time for at all.
the poo-pooing of youth. When you said he was 15, I was about to say, he must be about turning 10 now, is he? There he's 15.
No.
Oh, tempus fugit and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. Okay, so Rob, anything, any final words to wrap on these this set of five?
No, I don't think so. I think I've said quite enough.
Well, in that case, I shall finish this third of our four looks at the BBC's Mexico 1986 Top 20 Goals with my gratitude to our special guest this week, Mac Millings. Thank you, Mac.
Thank you, Gary.
Our regular, Rob Smythe. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Gary.
And I've been Gary Naylor. You've been our Patreon subscribers, and we're very grateful for that. See you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.